Perfect. Now I have your number. Thanks.
Hey, I'm Robbie Kramer. You're listening to the Leverage Podcast, where we discuss using your social skills to hack dating, travel, finding your dream job, and becoming a complete man.
We are back. As you see, we have a live guest. This is my co-host, Nick, for the day. And Nick is a former client and now an executive coach in the Leverage program. Those of you who don't know what the Leverage program is, this is the Leverage podcast, and the Leverage program is a community of guys who work on this stuff year round to make ourselves the best version of ourselves and improve with women, life, make more money, so on and so forth. If you're not doing that, or if you're not doing something that involves having a mentor and taking a lot of action, then you're just masturbating. So we'll go into more about Nick in a bit, maybe a little bit about his experience, but he's a brown belt in the program, which means he's getting pretty good with women. And I think the biggest key to his success is the fact that he does probably 20 to 30 approaches per week now that he's been,
not so much this week because it's like negative 10 outside.
Yeah. We're in Kiev, Ukraine. It's fucking cold. But, you've been consistently approaching a lot. And that's the difference between guys who are not getting results and improvement versus guys that are. And we also built this pretty cool secret tool that will help you to not only keep track of the women you meet, but approach them in a better way, which I'm only going to tell you about if you leave a review for this podcast. Send me a screenshot that you did it. You can email me robbie@innerconfidence.com or just DM me on Instagram. That's my Instagram is robbie_Kramer. And for those of you guys who listen to the podcast regularly, I usually do guest interviews. And I don't talk a lot about what's kind of going on with myself enough, which was your suggestion. So I'm going to tell you guys more about what the fuck I've been up to on this show. And hopefully it's not boring and useless, because that's kind of my thought a lot of the time is really, I don't know. People listen, obviously. So especially if you listen to this podcast often and you've never reached out to me on Instagram or left a review, what the fuck? Don't be such a lurking creeper weirdo. Say hi. So getting into it, on the show, we've got some cool discussions today. We're going to talk about the best strategy for single guys on New Year's Eve. It can be a huge opportunity or a humongous miss if you fuck this up. I'm going to talk about how to suck less with your texting and stop making horrible mistakes on the 1 yard line, which costs you awesome experiences. And I guess first I'll get into the life updates. So firstly, my hair transplant has has really started to grow in. I'm not using any of the dirt.
Oh, wow.
Can you see? You can see a little bit of bald. You can see a little bit of bald spots there.
I think it's pretty good, man.
And I should show the before pictures.
Yeah.
I'll be right back. You get those. What are your thoughts on hair transplants?
It just turned out really good. I think if you have the money, why not?
Yeah, a hair transplant in the US will run you about $10,000. But the best place to do it in the world where everyone goes is actually Istanbul, Turkey. Hmm. And there it's $2,500 typically, or $2,000. That includes airfare. So if you're thinking about doing it, I would highly recommend doing
it
there.
Is it the best because of the price or because also the quality is good because everybody comes there to do it?
Both. And most Americans are skeptical. Like, I'm not going to Turkey.
Yeah.
But it's total hogwash. And I've been losing my hair since the age 21. I'm 39. What I always did to kind of fake the funk was blue dry it. Luckily, I've always had my hairline. I'll show you before and after. So this,
oh wow,
right, you can see that pretty big bald
spot. I guess when you come out of the pool it looks like that, right?
No, it was dry at this point.
Yeah, but they're combing it down weird.
Well, they're combing it so they can see.
Yeah, right.
And then here's a better shot of what it looked like.
Wow, I didn't realize.
Right? And this was taken in July of 2021. Now it's December, and you can compare it, right?
And push your hair down. Yeah, wow.
Yeah. You know, I don't have any product in here. What I would do when I had this to fake the funk is I'd put this topic stuff.
It's like dust, right?
It's yeah. It's called topic. The logo is kind of blurred. But yeah, it's literally like dust that you can just like sprinkle in your hair like this.
Well, it's not going to make a difference on you anymore.
Yeah, luckily I don't need to use it. But this is what I was using. This is what I was using to, you know, that's kind of what it looks like. It's like, you know, dirt. that's what I was using before to just kind of like, you know, cover the area.
It does a pretty good job.
Yeah, and you were to the point where
you were recommending I do it.
I was recommending either you use the dust or you shave it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
I'm glad I shaved.
Yeah.
Things working out.
When I got the hair transplant, they shaved my head before they did it. And I had never seen my head shaved before. And I was like, oh, okay, it doesn't look terrible. And
oh yeah.
Yeah.
You're almost thinking about it.
I was thinking about it. I'd already paid.
They already got you. They already got your money. So I'd be too late to go that route.
So it's really important if you're listening or watching this and your hair is thinning noticeably. And usually we have some cognitive dissonance around this. Like we're worse than we think we are. Right. And so if you think you're thinning, you're probably thinning a lot.
Yeah.
And balding is not a choice. Bald is a choice, which is why if you're thinning, you should shave your head or you should get a hair transplant or fucking use this if you can fake the funk for a little while and then consider a hair transplant. Or, I mean, I use this stuff for like 15 years. I started using this stuff when I was like 27. So 12, 13 years I've been using that stuff. And I finally got to the point, you know, when my hair was kind of looking like this.
Where you could admit to yourself, 6 months ago, where maybe. I was like,
well, my buddy had gotten one done. I knew some other people. Like when you get a hair transplant, you realize like how many of your friends have actually got it done.
Everybody starts opening up.
Yeah. If you got a hair transplant, you can join our support group. you know, everyone tells you, and they've all went to Istanbul to do it. And they're really happy with their success. The people I know, I do know a few that went to, that did it in the US. And they were, I got worse reviews from those people and they spent five times more money.
Surprised.
Yeah.
I would say from my own experience, it's, you kind of want to, you owe it to yourself to see how you are bald. And I know it's kind of a big commitment because, you know, you can't just see it without having like being stuck in that state then for a few months. But if you are thinning, like I look back and I really should have done it years before I actually did. Cause I, like Robbie was saying, I definitely was thinning and kind of refusing to acknowledge it and somehow hoping it got better or stopped getting worse. And I always feared what my skull would look like the shape, but I don't think I've ever seen other people with their head shaved and I've been like, oh, they have a weirdly shaped head. They shouldn't have done that, you know? So it's just this phobia that everybody has about themselves. And yeah, it's a little bit shocking. You have to get used to it in the first like week, but then after a while you're like, oh, well, I should have done this earlier. And don't just like, we had other guys in the group, they would shave it to like, I actually need to clean this up a little bit, but we had other guys in the group that would like stop with like half a centimeter or a centimeter, right? Because they just didn't want to go all the way and shave it. And we're like, that looks really bad. Cause then you look like you're just trying to hold on to it. And they finally accepted and shaved all the way. And they're like, oh, you're right. This does look a lot better. So you really just, I think you owe it to yourself to do that once and see how it is. And you'll probably end up liking it by the time your hair grows back in. And worst case, your hair grows back in 2 to 3 months. I did it when COVID first hit and you couldn't go to the barber anymore. And so, you know, nobody was looking at me at a few month period where nobody was going to see if it was a mistake. Time. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I went for it.
And it took a little bit of coaxing.
Yeah.
Right. Like how long,
How
long had you been in leverage before I convinced you to shave it and the other guys convinced
6 to 8 months.
Seriously? That long?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Really?
A long time. Yeah.
Had you come to an immersion?
Yes.
Okay. So,
and I knew I didn't like the way it looked, but I really didn't want to accept that I was so bad that I had to do something about it.
Got it. So this, so, cause I probably said something to you like on the one first or second call we had, I'm guessing.
I don't remember that in particular. Maybe.
Okay. And then
I think it was more like it came up because you could see I was thin on like the group calls and stuff like that.
Right.
And then at the immersion, and you told me a month before the immersion that I should probably get something like that. So somehow it did come up.
Right.
One way or another.
Well, I remember telling you before.
Because, and you having some resistance to it. Because you said to bring the dirt stuff.
Oh, right.
Okay. And I hated the fucking dirt shit. Just on principle. Not because it doesn't work or anything. I just don't like the idea of changing myself like in that way. I mean, it's just my hang up.
Okay.
You know, the product works.
So you were... What convinced you to finally shave it off? Just our coaxing and pushing?
Coaxing and pushing, and the opportunity arose because I didn't have the barber available. So I did something where I was like, maybe I can shave my head. Like maybe I can kind of cut my hair on my own. It didn't work out at all. So I was like, all right, cool. Let's just shave it, see what happens. And
I don't think there's a single guy out there who looks worse with a shaved head than with the thinning hair, because you're always going to look more masculine and women are going to find that more attractive.
Yeah.
Every single time, like even if you have a weird shaped head or you have like scars or something, like you're just gonna look more masculine, and that's what women like. So it's I get it. Like I'm the example. Nick's an example of one guy who's just like, I'm just gonna fucking shave it, and I'm the example of the other guy who wanted to hold on to my hair. So you know, I use the products to fake the funk, and then I went for a hair transplant.
Yeah, you should definitely go one way or the other, though.
Yeah, you can't ride the fence.
Yeah. I think it was like an ego thing. I just didn't want to admit that I was failing to like have a solution to that problem. Like I didn't want to be in that category of a guy that had the problem. So I just denied that it existed kind of for as long as possible.
Right. Yeah, I did too. When I was like 24 till 27, my hair didn't look a whole lot different than this because I was using Rogaine and Propecia. I started losing my hair at like age 21. My father's a dermatologist, so he had me on all the, you know, the products to keep what I had, but I was, you know, I wasn't maybe this bad because this would slowly, you know, get worse every year, but it was bad enough where you could see it in pictures. And I had a hairstylist, like every time I'd go in for a haircut, she'd use it on me. Mm-hmm. And I was like, wow, it's like magic. I didn't know I could actually go out and buy it. So after like a year, she's like, why don't you use that stuff like every day? I'm like, oh, okay. Like guys, like we're just fucking retarded when it comes to personal care. A lot of the time it's just not something we understand. Like women put on makeup every day. What you're seeing is not what they look like. I can guarantee you. So if you have this hang up, like, oh, I'm doing something wrong or blah, blah, blah. It's like, fuck that. Like they're doing it too. They're doing it like to the, you know, millionth degree compared to what we're doing. So
fucking cheaters.
Yeah. Everyone's cheating. If you're not cheating, you're not trying. Right? That's stupid name. Yeah. Fuck, now I said it again. You know? When it comes to hair.
When it comes to hair.
Speaking of cheating,
Robbie Kramer, you're not cheating, you're not trying.
with your hair.
With your hair.
Speaking of cheating, in the relationship sense, just to give people an update, I've been monogamous now for 18 months. No cheating. I deserve a golf clap for that, considering my prior insane man whore lifestyle.
I have trouble believing it.
I mean, I took man whoring to about as far the level as you can, and I'm really glad I did, because I finally got to a point where I had sort of checked off everything on the bucket list as it comes to sex and partying, where I could, you know, happily sort of move into that next relationship. I don't know, call it a phase or whatever, or just a new way to do it. And the nice thing is, since that this has happened, obviously I found an awesome girl who's now my fiance. And you guys have seen her on the podcast. It's Maria. But prior to meeting her, like when I met her, I was really kind of looking for someone who could be a different sort of partner and kind of get myself out of the partying lifestyle. But since I've been monogamous, like I've talked to a few different dating coaches on the show about it. We did an interview with St. Robert Day Game, who has the St. Robert Day Game podcast, James Tusk. We talked about that a little bit too. I think a lot of it has to do with age, you know,
feeling like you got your fill too, I think.
Yeah. And the nice thing is, like, now I'm not obviously like generating fun and happiness and enjoyment through like new sexual conquests or new sexual adventures, but I've really like focused more on my health, and I'm playing tons of sports. I'm like either playing golf, tennis, or hockey almost every day. And I'm in the best shape I've been in since maybe ever. Way less drinking, way less partying, unhealthy shit. So I feel great. You know, I feel good all the time. So obviously if I was single, and you know, what would I probably be doing? I'd probably be out doing some partying, maybe not as much as I did before. But if you're asking yourself the question, because this came up recently with, like, you know, some of the guys in the leverage group on the calls, should I commit to a girl? When should I commit to a girl? My theory on that, because I've had so many situations where I knew I shouldn't commit, kind of in my gut, but I did anyways, and then I ended up cheating, or I ended up getting bored and leaving. And I think that's something we kind of need to listen to, that internal voice. And you gotta choose your regrets, because if you feel like you have unfinished business when it comes to your sexual lifestyle and ventures, and you decide to be in a monogamous relationship, like, that's part of, you're killing those opportunities, unless you decide to cheat, which I definitely don't recommend, because that causes all sorts of other problems and fucks over someone else and leads to all sorts of bad feelings. So don't commit unless you're a super hell yes. Like, I was a super hell yes to that. I was like, I don't want to be doing this crazy shit anymore. It's not interesting. It's no longer fun. And I was looking for the right girl to have like a normal relationship with. But if you're not in that headspace, you need to go out and fucking have those fun times. And, you know, any thoughts on that?
Yeah. I mean, my perspective on your relationship, I was happy that you found that, because, you know, I'm kind of looking, right, I'm getting into this area more and more, and I'm kind of like,
try to speak towards it.
Oh yeah. I'm getting into this kind of, you know, industry more and more. And, you know, I kind of see what you're doing as maybe being a preview of like in 5 years where I'm at. Right. So I'm kind of hesitant to like, you know, sometimes I wonder if I get so successful with women, have so much opportunity, would I then become the kind of guy that couldn't tolerate commitment? Right. Because you'd always be tempted by something else and so distracted by everything.
Good question.
And, you know, does that mean you're going down a road where there is no kind of happy, obviously there's no happy ending Hollywood thing, but, you know, are you almost ruining yourself, right, in a way? Right. And so
I totally had those feelings. I thought I ruined myself. And then I learned that I didn't.
So, yeah. So yeah. I've actually it's been a pleasant surprise, because I knew you before you were with Maria, maybe for about a year before that became serious. And it was kind of a pleasant surprise in a way. I mean, on one hand, I lost the crazy, like, dating coach is going to like go out and do like set up the craziest fucking orgy parties and everything. Right. But on the other hand, it was like, hey, cool, there's this thing that you can move towards where you get past that point and you can go into that relationship that you probably always got into this program in the first place for.
Yeah. Yeah. And I know a lot of other guys who were living that lifestyle with me and who are still living that lifestyle. And the majority of them have ended up in serious legal problems or like crazy situations that went down. You know, if you're living that crazy party lifestyle, where you're, you know, sleeping with tons of women and doing things, living your life on that edge, there's a high probability that, you know, some crazy shit's going to go down and you'll end up in a tough spot, you know, like, you mix those things together, you're just asking for drama and problems. Like, you know, sure, if you guys saw the dude in Dubai who was arrested along with 20 models for posing naked on a balcony, that was a guy I used to party with a lot. And I knew a handful of those girls. So, you know, there was a decent chance I could have been there while that was happening had I not been in a relationship. I was invited on that trip. So luckily I didn't go, because I would also have ended up in a Dubai prison, which wouldn't be good. You know, the when I'm just kind of curious, when you knew me before I was with Maria, mm-hmm. and you sort of looked at my lifestyle, mm-hmm. or you kind of got an idea of what it was like, were you like surprised by it, shocked by it? What were your thoughts about it?
Your lifestyle, or so no Maria yet.
Right.
No, I wasn't shocked or surprised by it. I don't remember when I became aware of like your yacht trips and stuff like that, and uh-huh. how far you went with it, and like this whole Dubai thing kind of, you know, I became more and more familiarized with the world that you were involved in, especially at the last Kiev immersion.
Hmm, right.
And that was after you were with Maria.
Right.
So, no, but I mean, it wasn't like super unexpected or anything like that.
Okay. That's kind of what I was asking.
So. Yeah,
that's
good.
Okay. Yeah. Just curious. So yeah, if you're thinking about committing, but you haven't, you know, gotten that stuff out of your system, you need to get out of your system.
Yeah.
And if you want to do it, you can't do it, you know, talk to us about that. We can help you do it.
I think it's important to experience that so you know whether you want it or not. And to just, you know, it's sort of like how people say, I don't know, I've heard Jordan Peterson talk about stuff like where you're not a good guy if you're weak, mm-hmm. you know, you have to go and get those experiences and know that you can do the thing. And then it's powerful if you say, oh, I don't want that. Whereas if you're just some guy that sits back and says, no, I don't want to have sex with all these beautiful women, I just want my one woman. And maybe you feel that way, or maybe you're just kind of afraid to even try. Right. And you don't really know. And it's probably a defensive mechanism in your head. Right. So going out, knowing that you could have that, but then at one point you choose somebody that you're really excited about, that's going to be a much more powerful relationship, I feel. You'll be a lot more secure in that decision.
And the woman you're with is totally going to feel that.
Yes.
And she's going to be way more attracted to the guy that can go out and do that. There's nothing more sexy. And if you've ever read a romance novel, they all have the same exact plot. There's a powerful man who can fuck whoever he wants. Who's got like a hole in his heart, you know, because he's sick of all the
all the whoring,
and he's just looking for the right woman. But he's tormented, and he doesn't know what's going on. He's kind of blind to a lot of this happening, but he's just strong, and he's, you know, he's the prince, or he's he's 50 Shades of Grey. It's the same fucking story, right? And then she's the one who shows him, you know, a better life, and then they have this like amazing sex, and he ties her up and all that good stuff. So that's literally the plot of every fucking romance novel, which tells you this: in who reads romance novels, like more women read romance novels than guys watch porn, if you can believe that. That's wow. A proven stat. That's how fucking popular this shit is.
It's a lot of romance novels.
It is. Literotica. Right. So every woman wants that. Every woman wants a guy who has done a lot of whoring. They don't have to like shout about it from the rooftop, but they can tell. They're like, oh, that guy's got the eye of the tiger. I can see.
I'm not sure if they like the fact that he did a lot of whoring, but they like the fact that he could do it.
Correct.
They want the guy that's capable of that.
Right.
But how the fuck are you ever going to be capable of that if you've never actually done it, right?
If you haven't done it, they're going to know that you haven't done it. And it doesn't mean they're not going to date you, right? You can certainly, you know, even if you've never had any experience at all and you're not interested in that, you just want one amazing woman, like that could be an awesome relationship. There's a lot of religious people that kind of have that experience, and they're great, right? But it depends on who you're trying to date, right?
Yeah, and if those, like I have Mormon friends, mm-hmm. they've only been with each other, right? Yeah. But that's their community and that's their set of standards,
right?
Right. So if you're not in that community, though, that could be weird, right? If you're looking in the general community, though, the women,
if you're trying to date an Instagram model,
yeah, and you're like saving yourself your entire life, it's probably not going to end up too well.
Yeah, not gonna happen. Oh, so let's change gears a little bit. I'm probably going to spend the rest of the winter in Turkey because Kiev is minus 10 degrees Celsius right now. That's like 10 degrees Fahrenheit for those of you counting at home, something like that. And Nick, you'll join us at some point as well. And when I do finally get the fiance visa for Maria, we're going to try to go on that show, 90 Day Fiance. If you guys watch that show,
I haven't heard this.
I've been talking to the casting directors in my email, and
what's the show about? What's the premise?
Never heard of 90 Fiance?
No,
it's like one of the most popular shows in the US. It's about, they have 90 Day Fiance and then they have 90 Day the other way. So it's literally people going through the 90 Day Fiance visa process. They follow around couples like me and Maria when Maria arrives to the US. And it's reality TV. So they follow you around, they interview, like they show you with the family, and they try to embellish the drama around.
This does not sound good, man.
It could be
why would you want more drama?
Well, because then you get fun. The publicity. You get on TV, bro.
That's true.
It's fun. I think our relationship could handle the drama, okay, and the pressure.
All right.
But they find someone.
Tune in 6 months to see what happens.
They find a family member who's like disapproving, because there's always some family members. Yeah. They're like, why don't you just marry an American girl?
You know
girl?
Who that's going to be?
Oh, from my mom.
The Jewish mom.
Right. And, because moms are thinking about the future. They're like, well, if you have kids and, what if she wants them to live in Ukraine? And then I'm not going to get to see my grandkids. And then she's always wanted me to obviously move back to the U.S.
Sounds like she misses me.
Yeah. So, obviously your
parents. Don't get stuck over there.
Right. So they can definitely, embellish that drama.
Mm-hmm. Is that happening this summer then? You guys are going back?
I don't know. We applied for the visa in August. And they take 6 to 8 months without COVID.
Yeah.
With COVID. Okay. Who knows?
Interesting.
So now we've got a couple things left on the docket. We're going to talk about New Year's, but before that, let's talk about some texting blunders.
Dude, they're going to love you guys too, because you guys are so weird together. Like, not like you guys are weird, but like your situation, like she's Miss Ukraine kind of thing, and dating coach guy.
That's true.
That's going to be a wild show, man.
We've got a sleazy dating coach mixed with a Miss Ukraine finalist.
They're gonna hit up your exes on Instagram or something and get them to get back in touch with you and film the whole drama and shit. They're gonna stir the pot
for sure,
intentionally.
Oh, that's what they do.
Oh man.
maybe we won't go on.
You're so extreme. No, go. That's funny though. I like how you're just like so sure, you like bring it up. The whole fucking media, American media structure can't affect our relationship.
Famous last
words. I know. Well, we'll see. That's exciting.
Yeah. Well, if they accept us, they might not.
But dude, I don't know why they would. That's gold, man.
Yeah. I mean, I would think so too. So let's talk about texting. One thing that guys tend to really screw up is date invitations. And one of the biggest facets of the texting guide is don't ask her out, tell her out. What does that mean? Well, if you ask a girl out, hey, will you go out with me? You want to come for drinks on Monday? Like, it just looks a little bit weak and pussy. Versus if she's already expressed interest in a date and you tell her where you're meeting and when, it's a just more masculine way to do it. So I'm going to pull up this text and read it.
And I would say the most powerful part of that advice really is it just gets rid of all that. Like, maybe it's socially acceptable to ask, right? But if you're going to force yourself to not ask and to tell, it gets rid of all the nice guy, like tendency that you have just latent in that text anyways. It always makes my text like way better if I'm like, because I always start with a question, hey, you want to go out? And I'm just like, no, you got to fucking tell her. And it just, it stops me from going to that nice guy mode in the first place.
Yeah. And the, just if anyone's confused on like the structure, let's say you meet a girl out, you know, you're walking around this during the day, you meet her, you approach her, you message her with some callback humor, and you text back and forth probably 5 to 7 times. If she seems eager and she's responding to the messages and investing in the conversation, the structure of this is you say, hey, how's your schedule? I'm taking you out for drinks, right? Or just, hey, how's your schedule? When are you free? She'll say this date. And then you say, great, let's meet at 8 p.m. and you send her the address. So mm-hmm. that's telling her out. It's not like you're going to go out with me, which actually might work.
But. Well, no, I mean, you do say, hey, how's your schedule? I'm taking you out for drinks.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you're saying I'm taking you out, right?
Right.
It's very presumptive in a, compared to what most guys would do. It's very presumptive, right? Whereas most guys are like, it's a question. They don't know. Because when I've told some of the guys in the group this, they're like I told Andreas this or something. He's like, I'm just assuming that she's going to say yes. Like, isn't that rude? Mm-hmm.
No, it's not rude. She's texting with you.
Yeah, but it makes, it makes sense.
Yeah, she wants to go out with you. So here's an example. This is Angela from Bumble. And he suggests a evening at Par Bar. It's a cool place. You will like it. What night are you free? And she didn't respond.
Are you showing it right now?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
She didn't respond. And then he said, ready, say yes to life. And it looks like that was sent the next day at 1 p.m. What are your thoughts on the no response followed by the ready, say yes to life?
Well, it's typical double texting. Say yes to life. I don't know. It's not my style.
I would recommend against that. You know, here in Ukraine, you can get away with that. If you do that in the U.S., you're way less likely to never get a response back. Mm-hmm. And the reason why is what you see in cultures that are less affected by feminism and they're a little bit more traditional is you have more leeway to be a little bit more aggressive and forward. Where in the U.S. or Western cultures, like if they don't respond to the first thing, it's usually just because they're not interested. They don't want you to message them again. You're likely to just get totally ghosted at that point. But here, the girls tend to be more passive. And even though it's not optimal, you can sometimes get away with it. But that could lead to problems down the road, which we'll see. So ready, say yes to light. And then she says,
I also don't like him at the beginning here. You see, it is a cool place. You will like it. What night? Like, I don't like it is a cool place. You will like it. Like, it's a little bit overselling kind of thing.
You're selling the wrong thing, right? Like she should be showing up not because of the cool place. She should be showing up because she likes you, right?
And obviously you're going to be bringing her to a cool place. You don't have to like convince her it's going to be a cool place and she'll like it, you know?
Right. So she says, hey, I leave Kiev for a few days. And then he responds, okay, So you are secret agent, wink face. Have you returned from secret mission yet? Your thoughts?
Yeah, it's funny. I mean, coming up with, it's just playful humor, I guess, accusing her of being a secret agent.
But like, she's saying she's leaving and then she'll come back, basically. So she's saying she can't come out right then because she's leaving Kiev for a few days, right?
Right.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's necessarily wrong. I probably would have just been like, okay, see you when you get back, maybe.
Okay. I don't love the secret agent joke.
It's overplayed.
It's just a little too try hard. Yeah. It's not the worst thing ever, but it's, you know, I think obviously with a girl who's more like socially adjusted, you're going to strike out with that, right? Again, there's a language barrier here because you can see this is someone, no, I live Kiev for a few days. Like you can tell English is not her first language and she's likely running this through a translator, mm-hmm. a lot of the stuff.
So I'm assuming that she responded on the 15th
And then 3 days later, he sent this text. Mm-hmm. And it was kind of like a way to get back in touch and start the conversation over, right? Because he's like,
oh, there's a time gap. Yeah.
Yeah. Have you returned from your secret mission yet?
Okay. Okay. In that context, this is better.
It's more like a callback.
Yeah. A little bit of callback humor. Yeah. Maybe they joked about that before.
Right.
Decent chance they did. So if they did, that's fine. Also, I don't like because she's going to be running everything through a translator, you never know how that's going to come out. That could be translated into something weird. You just want to eliminate chances for confusion.
Yeah. I wish his texts were less flowery and more direct, kind of like hers are short. And his paragraphs kind of are bigger and more elaborate.
Right. You can always tell how someone's doing with the girl they're texting by simply looking from a far distance at the screen and looking at the number of characters on each side,
mm-hmm.
right? He's outnumbering her probably like 4-5 to 1,
mm-hmm.
right? And that shows a level of investment. So next, and no, I'm not. I have already back to Kiev. And he responds, interesting. I have 2 good looking American friends that maybe want to go out Friday. They also live Kiev now. More details tomorrow. She says, cool. Okay. We are interested. And funny enough, the 2 good looking Americans are me and Nick.
Maybe you oversold the good looking part.
And
so I think before this, though, there was some text on Bumble where mm-hmm. she said she had 2 other friends that wanted to go out.
Got it.
Because that's why she's talking about it right here, right? We are interested. And that's why he's saying, I have 2 good looking American friends that want to go out.
Mm-hmm. And one of the things that we do in the leverage program is I follow students around undercover on their dates. Sometimes mic them up and give feedback on how your dating is and how those skills are. And I owe, my client who's in this message, one of those sessions. So this is how we were going to kind of do it on a triple date. So I would be the undercover secret agent.
Yeah, I think it would be really fun if this worked out.
But. Yeah. So then he responds, we have a plan. We meet at Par Bar for some drinks, food, shisha. Then we take you to a cool private Christmas party, then out to the club. Will you join us? What are your thoughts on that message?
Yeah, when I saw that this morning, I really didn't like it. Because the thing I mostly picked up on, again, was the tell her out thing. When I was reading this, especially when it gets to the last sentence, will you join us? So she said they're interested. He then lays out all these cool things we're going to do to take them on. And then says, will you join us? Like, it's just too much of a, hey, look at all the cool stuff I have. Would you maybe deign to come out on this event with us? You know, it's like, just, that's the perfect time where you want to say, you know, meet us there or whatever. And honestly, all this explanation of what's happening, I think is relatively unnecessary just because they already said they're interested, right? So it's too much like trying to impress them again, offering too much stuff at first, like from their perspective, what the fuck have they done to deserve us to invite them to a cool Christmas, private Christmas party?
And then a club.
Like, why have these guys put forth so much effort when they've just only met us? It's probably because they have nothing else going on, you know?
And like, if the Christmas party's cool, why would you need to go to a club? And
yeah.
And also from the other standpoint, she's like, I've never met these guys. What if they suck?
Right.
Now I'm committing
now, yeah,
to
exactly.
Shisha, food, a Christmas party, and right. a club. So a yes is like committing to an entire Friday night.
And I think it's always a lot cooler also when they don't exactly know what's going on. Like, you have the plan in your head, right? But, and I think it's good to say very direct instructions for like where to meet, when, you know, maybe what they should, what the environment's like, how they should dress, right? They need to know that you have a plan, but to reveal the entire plan like that is also kind of killing some of the tension, right? Because when it's really interesting when after an hour or 40 minutes you're on the first date and it's going well, it's like, okay, let's go. And you haven't said necessarily what's happening. You're just getting the check, right? So they're like, is it over? Is it going? Like, what the fuck is going on? And then you bring them somewhere else, right? And that keeps it's more fun that way. It kind of reveals itself after a while. But here it's like, oh, we've got this whole structure and plan for the evening thing, and here's your 11 course meal.
Right. So when I was talking, you know, with the guy, we'll call him Mr. F. When I was talking to Mr. F about the plan, I was like, all right, we need to follow the dating protocol. For those of you who don't know what the dating protocol is, immediately go to interconfidence.com and download it. It's the thing like right on the main page. It's how to run an awesome date and all of the venues to go to, which venues to choose, how to know when it's time to kiss her and escalate. And so the plan with him was, first we're going to go to shisha bar, and then we're going to go to this private Christmas party. We never said anything about a club, but an after party option is always this one club called Just Cafe, which is a sort of a karaoke hybrid club. And it's a lot of fun and a good place to go late night. Like, it doesn't even open until like 3 or 4 a.m. or it doesn't really get going until 3 or 4 a.m. It opens before that, but that's like the high time. So I'm like, you need to have that plan in your head, but the only thing that she needs to know is where to meet.
Right.
And the rest should feel like the spontaneous, amazing thing that you take her on and a cool adventure that she wasn't expecting.
And ideally it's almost like you changed your mind after meeting them and now you want to take them with you.
Right. The first thing should just be casual on show. Oh yeah, let's grab drinks and shisha.
Yeah.
At 8:30 and not, you know, offering food and all that stuff that you're just asking for. You're making yourself into like a nice guy. You're showing that you'll do anything that she wants. You're losing all of your,
you're going to roll out the red carpet for her. Mm-hmm. And then you're going to ask nicely that she come step on it. I guess, right? That's what he did.
Yeah. That's a good way to say it. So if you're making those mistakes, stop, please.
And so we actually, apparently she hadn't read it. And who knows if she actually did read it or not, but officially through Telegram, she hadn't yet. So we recommended that he wanted to change the text. So we recommended, what would we say? Just the proper text should have just been, cool, meet us at Par Bar 8.
Right.
Just keep it simple. And it's also short, like all of her texts have been. Like, there's no reason to go overboard with it.
So he deleted that and resent the short one. Hopefully she didn't read it through her lock screen prior.
Yeah.
But even if she did, not the end of the world. Then
it looks like maybe he's pulling back.
Right.
You know?
It's like, so we're not going to do the club?
Yeah.
The
private Christmas party? No. Found somebody else.
Yeah. Forget about the club.
Yeah.
You're out. So last thing on today's agenda is, let's talk about New Year's Eve. It's December 24th currently. So Merry Christmas Eve to, well, no one's going to be watching this today. Maybe, no, I'm going to release this shit today. So if you do watch this today, Merry Christmas Eve. And what should you do on New Year's? Now, the best thing to do on New Year's Eve, in my opinion, are house parties. And obviously, if it's small and it's with, you know, a close group of friends and there's going to be some single girls there, that's like your optimal environment. The worst thing to do on New Year's Eve is go out, spend a ton of money. It's the worst holiday because you always have these huge expectations and they're way better. The reality never meets the expectations. You end up spending a bunch of money. I remember this one year, I went out to, it was like the Hilton San Diego, and it was like $150 a ticket, which included like open bar. And there's like five awesome DJs in five ballrooms, except it took like 45 minutes to get a fucking drink because it was open bar. And the bartenders were super pissed off because, you know, they were making way less than tips. It was super crowded. It's fucking amateur night. Every single person who doesn't go out typically will go out because it's New Year's and you're supposed to go out. So that means sloppy drunk people, early, super long lines, crowds, increased security. It's just a fucking shit show. So avoid those types of like big public places. Like the absolute worst thing that anyone could ever do, my sister's done this actually a few times, so I don't know, I think she's crazy, is go to watch the fucking ball drop at Times Square.
Oh my God.
How could you do that? Like, you're sandwiched in like sardines. She said she had to pee for like 3 hours. People were just pissing like on the street. I just don't see
what the allure is.
It's freezing cold. How the fuck? Like, why? So you see the ball drop, which you can see on TV. I guess
it's like you're sharing this event that's popular.
I mean, I guess like a bucket list thing. I saw the ball drop on New Year's Eve. Sure.
Yeah.
But
beyond that, right? If you're not like trying to be part of this.
If you're a single guy trying to get laid on New Year's, do not do that.
Yeah.
Or anything close to that.
Terrible.
So the other piece of advice, which I think is really important, if you do happen to meet someone on New Year's, do not wait until midnight to kiss them.
Mm.
This is because what will happen is most likely, they might even leave before midnight because they're like, we don't want to deal with the traffic and like getting out, because everyone's going to leave. All the amateurs will leave exactly after midnight. They'll do the countdown. You know, they'll cheers and be like, I'm tired, I got work, and they'll fucking leave, and her friends will cock block her, take her away. Odds are, if she's a single girl, she's out with like her couple friends, and they're not going to want to stay out very long past the ball drop. Like, as soon as that shit's done, they're like, all right, we're leaving, and they're going to take her with her. So if you wait until like midnight to kiss her, and you just kissed her, you don't have a super strong connection at this point. She's probably not likely to go with you to another place and leave her friends. And you're going to have like 5 to 10 minutes after that before she gets pulled out of there. So what does that tell you? You need to make your move early. I would recommend doing it as early as you fucking can. And if you're going to go out, you're going to go out to a public place, go out really early too. Go out like fucking 7:30, 8:30, and get the early crowd before it's like a total shit show drunken fest. That way you can, if you do meet someone, you could do the fake countdown. You could be like, oh, look, it's almost New Year's. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Happy New Year. And then you reach in and you kiss her. Right. And then she's like, right. And even if she turns her cheek or whatever, it's funny. It's like the dumbest, it's corny and it's funny. And you'd be like, come on, I'm not going to wait till midnight to kiss you. What do you think? I'm some sort of like normal person. Who does that? Like, you're going to see that coming from a mile away. So, we got it an hour before New Year's. Stay on your toes. I'm going to try again. So that's how you deal with it. You have to say something. If she rejects you and you don't say something, then it's just fucking awkward.
But if you show that you're cool with it and whatever, then even if she's being awkward about it, like I've had it happen to me where the girls literally said, well, this is awkward now. I'm like, why? I tried to kiss it. You said no. Done.
You'll say yes sooner or later.
Yeah.
So please do not wait until midnight.
Well, and it just goes back to the whole, I think you say this all the time, right? The expectations are going to kill any of the seduction. Yeah. That's why you don't wait to kiss them on their doorstep right before you leave, right? It's because at the end of the day, what it really is you're just being such a pussy that you're hesitating until the last possible minute when expectations are that you should do it. Why not break those expectations? Why not do it when you want to do it earlier on? Why not surprise her when she's not obviously expecting it, when society doesn't say, okay, now is the appropriate time that you should do this thing, right? And then if you do wait for New Year's or for when you're on the doorstep, she's been thinking for the last 5 minutes, oh boy, here it comes, and it's just like, it's all this weird bullshit mental tension behind it. It's not romantic or spontaneous or anything like that.
Yep. So if you do succeed in kissing her before midnight, and even before you kiss her, you want to find out what the logistics of her situation is immediately. You want to find out who she came with, what she's likely doing after that, how much of a party appetite she has. And depending on the answers to those questions will dictate the next venue you want to go to. If you do go out to some sort of event, it'd be awesome if you have like an after party setup, or at least make sure you have a bottle of wine and some music back at your place. So if you do take her home and your place is fucking clean, I wish I didn't have to say that, but I do, have an option of where to go after. And it's always important. Remember the dating protocol, the seduction during night is really the same. You want to go to like at least three venues before taking her home.
So if you've already kissed her, though, it's
kind of that's the second venue. Yeah. So you want to go to one more venue and then home.
Couples thing. That's fun.
Even I interviewed Timo Hardy on the podcast many episodes ago, who's a world-renowned, like, super famous porn star. And we were hanging out in Tbilisi, Georgia together, and we were just like walking around the streets talking about our crazy sort of sex lives back in my man whoring days. And he's like, "You know about the fake club move?" And I'm like, "What's the fake club move?" He's like, "Every time I meet a girl at a club, you know, I don't take her straight home because then she knows I'm gonna take her home and she'll cock block. Mm-hmm. But I take her to a club that's closed." And then I'm like, "Oh, shit, this place is closed. All right, I got drinks back in my house." And I'm like, I didn't know
that he knows his clothes.
He knows his clothes.
That's what you really want.
Because if she's willing to go to another club, she wants it, right? She wants to hang out. She's not probably willing to go home yet.
And at least you made an attempt.
But you tried, right?
You don't think she's a total whore because, you know, you thought you had to butter up with one more place, but it's not your fault.
Yep. So
may have been open clubs around, but this one you wanted and you tried.
You know it's closed. He knows it's closed. She doesn't know it's closed. And I'm like, that's fucking hilarious. I do the same thing. I just don't call it that.
Oh.
And I didn't.
And what
I don't
did you call it again? Fake club?
The fake or the closed club move. So that's, you know, I always recommend during the dating protocol, like when you're out on a date, after you kiss her, which should happen on like the second venue, the third venue is a couple's experience, which is anything you can do together as a couple. And if you've already kissed her, you already kind of have that couple's vibe. You can kind of touch her like she's your girlfriend. And so going to a club and having it be closed is a great couple's experience, right? Like you do this thing together where you experience this like the highest of highs, the lowest of lows, but then, oh, we're going back to my place. It'll be fun again.
Mm-hmm.
So there you go. Any other sort of New Year's things you feel like I missed or guys should be looking out for?
No.
Go early. Escalate early, venue change, have a after party situation, and the odds of you ringing in the new year, you know, having some fun should be.
But ideally, set up your own small party thing.
Of course.
Yeah.
Ideally, you should be, you know, building your lifestyle towards having an awesome social circle, meeting women through that social circle, lots of day game. If you're not doing that shit, another plug for the Leverage program, fucking join. If you want to see if it's a good fit for you, go on the site innerconfidence.com/leverage and fill out the application. We can jump on a phone call and see if it's a good fit. So stop doing this shit alone. If you're listening to this podcast regularly and not taking action, not approaching women, you know, you need to do something because otherwise nothing's going to change from listening to this podcast, but not doing anything.
Yeah. More information, probably not going to help.
Yeah. So leave a review as well if you want to get that cool sort of new tool I talked about. And see you guys next week.
Thanks for listening. If you want more, go to innerconfidence.com. And don't forget to subscribe to this podcast for the latest episodes.